He's back again. He just happened to be in Indianapolis for a national conference of great city schools, all the major urban school districts here. The one and only, the president of the National Urban League, Brother Mark Morial. Good to see you again.
It's always good to be in Indianapolis. It's always good to be with you, Amos. Thanks for coming over to talk to me.
Let me start with the election, but something a little different. We're both students of history, and if we remember our American history, back in the day, employers would tell their employees who to vote for. That really hasn't been the case the last maybe 20, 30 years in election. Now we're getting where Mitt Romney supporters, and even Mitt Romney himself, telling his supporters, employers, tell your workers who to vote for. Are we getting ready to have a period of workplace tension, and African Americans need to be aware of this regardless of what happens in 20 some days?
It crosses the line for an employer to say to his or her employees who to vote for. It is appropriate. It is right. It is, I think, consistent with civic involvement and democracy for an employer to say to their employees, you should vote, and let me encourage you to vote. And at the National Urban League, for our own employees, we give them a little bit of time flexibility, an extra hour if they need the time to go out and vote, because it's important that they vote. But that's a little bit over the line to me for an employer to say to his or her employees, you should or you must vote for a particular person.
Should we be concerned in African-American community what could happen in workplaces after this election, regardless of the outcome?
I mean, we should always be concerned. I mean, I don't have any extraordinary concerns at this point. This election is highly contested, and because it's the reelection of the president, there's a historical dimension to it, no doubt. But our obligation and responsibility right now is to make sure people turn out to vote, make sure people have what they need to vote, the information they need. If they're in a state where some sort of papers or ID is required, they understand that and they are prepared with that. We need to raise our voices and say to people that they should pay close attention to the positions of the candidates in making a decision as to who they should vote for.
We've gone through two presidential debates that dealt with domestic issues. Virtually none of the issues of importance to African Americans was raised. After this election, will national black leadership get together with BET, with TV1, with Ebony Jet, Black Enterprise, Essence, and try to, for the next presidential election, put something on the table where the Republican and the Democratic candidate must address issues of urban America?
Amos, I think it's time for the presidential debate system to be overhauled and changed. I mean, you have three debates. You, for the most part, have mainstream journalists who are very good forcing a discussion around a limited set of issues. A set of issues that, albeit important, are not the only important issues. There was a passing reference in the second debate to education. There was a passing discussion about immigration. There was very little about economic empowerment. The word urban never came up once. And to that extent, we would be better, I think, if the candidates had more debates and each of them with a group of issues, a set of topics that are crucial and that can cover the waterfall. And I think the African-American leadership in the nation, we have to take a look at this and challenge for there to be changes in this process.
Is there any diversity in the leadership of the Presidential Debate Commission?
I'm not sure who's
on. If you're not sure, then
I'm not sure, you know, who's on the board. And let me say this, it's like so much. They're probably good people, but there is not enough diversity. And I think we see by what we've seen in terms of the narrowness. For example, there's going to be a debate on foreign affairs on Monday, and I think that's going to be an important debate. I would venture to say that the debate and the discussions around the Middle East will consume 50% of the time. The Middle East is important. Syria and Libya are important. Iraq and Afghanistan are important to all people. But we need a discussion about trade relations with Latin America, with Brazil, with Mexico, how we are going to build stronger relationships internationally with Africa, where China is investing in big numbers, how the changing global dynamics change American trade, Americans both economic and personal security. We need a broader discussion about foreign affairs. I'm not sure if that's going to happen on Monday. We should wait and see. But if you had more diversity, you'd have a more diverse conversation.
One of the things we discovered here in Indianapolis from the new 2011 American Community Survey, the economic data, is a sharp economic divide just among African Americans in this city. Median black income in the inner part of the inner city, just at $17,000, which in today's 21st century is just mind-boggling. It's that low. And black median income in the other outer parts of just the city, twice that number. Nearly 50% of African Americans in poverty in the inner cities. And I'm hearing that's being replicated in other cities across the country. In the midst of this great recession, do we have a great economic divide in black America?
We have a growing economic divide because the recession has pushed many people from being stable working class or middle class, has pushed them into poverty or to the edges of poverty. All the statistics, all of the numbers on jobs and home ownership point to that certain picture. That's why every city, every state and the nation at large has to confront that dealing with the economic divide, dealing with poverty, is an issue that we have to put on the table. There's not enough discussed about it. There's not enough of an awareness about it. The situation in Indianapolis is similar to Cincinnati or Cleveland or Chicago or any of the great American cities that have large African-American communities.
Here in Indianapolis, you're speaking at a conference of the major school systems. Obviously, education choice, charter schools, teacher evaluation are some of the issues I'm sure are going to be discussed in the quarters. But one issue that seems to be ignored is training and development of school leaders. In other words, we talk about everything else in improving education, and we don't talk about that critical importance of that school leader, that school principal. You have a great principal, you have a great school, you have a lousy principal, you'll have a lousy school.
You made a very important point, and it's a point towards which the education agenda, the reform agenda in the nation is an incomplete agenda. There are a number of issues. Effective school leaders, effective school teachers, how we can attract and develop a larger pool of effective school leaders and a larger school pool of effective school teachers is an issue that does not have enough visibility. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Another issue is the inadequacy of school funding. The way in which dollars are spent to fund education is important to success. However, funding policies at the federal, state, and local level give more resources to students that already have more resources and less to those that have fewer. We've got an inequitable system within a school district, within a state. That has to be confronted. People say, well, why is it important? It goes to facilities. It goes to enhancements. It goes to what a school can pay teachers.
One of the issues that came up in the first debate that all of the pundits missed, we talked about it on the radio because when I actually heard that part when Mitt Romney talked about block granting Title I, my ears perked up because I understood what that meant. How come that got thrown out there really didn't get any traction?
Because mostly people who are educators understand what that means. The general public doesn't know what Title I is all about. They have no idea. So as you raise it, that is the kind of issue that should be raised in a debate. What do you mean by block granting Title I? And block granting Title I would be a
or allowing it to be used as voucher money.
It is a grave mistake because what it would do is it would shortchange the very students who would benefit from Title I and for whom Title I was designed for.
We're having an interesting debate here in Indiana at the governor's race. The Republican candidate for governor, Mike Pence, the Libertarian candidate, Rupert Bonham, the guy that was on Survivor back in the day, have talked about college is not for everyone. We need better system of vocational education to really try to get people to the jobs that people that employers say they really need. And there has been a kind of a backlash against college, this college push, college for everyone.
We should push college, but college may not be for everyone. What we need to ensure is that people have choices and that there is a robust effort to help people earn college degrees. But there also should be an effort for those that do want a skill. So, for example, today, if you look at health careers, there are a wide variety of health careers that do not require a 4-year degree. Some require a 2-year degree. Even many others require an occupational diploma or certificate. Those kinds of things and strengthening every one of those pipelines is what this goes to. We have to reject the either-or proposition. We also have to reject the idea that somehow young people should not be pushed for college but offered alternatives. That's the key. We should push young people to go to college. We should push them to achieve as much as they can. But if they don't, if they can't, if they won't, we should have other pipelines, community colleges, technical careers, a wide range of things. This is the kind of work the Urban League does. You don't need to go out and create a set of new institutions. What these candidates should do is to empower the Indianapolis Urban League and Joe Slash with the resources to provide that sort of technical training. That's an option.
When you go on, and I know you've been a part of Education Nation with Morning Joe, can't you convince them that we got all this education going on here in Indiana? And, you know, I love when they go to schools in New Jersey. I love when they go to schools in Los Angeles. They need to come here to the Midwest.
Amos, I'll put in a good word.
We got some great schools out here.
You know, you should email them. And I bet if you emailed them, I bet they'd be willing to come on your radio show.
Let me also ask, people are listening right now, and there may be some that, like the guy that questioned in the debate the other night, I've not seen my life turn around under you, Mr. President. I've not seen the help. I got the urgency 4 years ago. I don't see the urgency today, and they want to stay home.
The truth is, to get out of the ditch that the country was in 2009 isn't going to happen in a single election cycle. The truth is that the ship of state was just a few feet away from a horrific waterfall down which it would have cascaded and took the whole American economy down with it. And I think the other truth is that now we are not headed towards a waterfall, but we are still navigating in very choppy and difficult waters. And what people want is a smooth ride, which means a better economy and a better path. And I think that's ahead. I think that that's in the future, but it's not going to be without difficulty. What we have been through, it took Roosevelt and the country from 1929 all the way to the late 40s to emerge from all of what the Great Depression represented. It was World War II and beyond. It took a very, very long time. What many politicians do not like to say is that 4 years is not enough to fix completely the problems that the country faced in January 2009.
But that is what the president is saying.
That
4 years isn't enough. I need another four.
And I would have said on January 20th, 2009, that 4 years will not be enough. The depth is too great. You know, you think about it. If your car would have had an unfortunate incident and gone down the side of a mountain, far down the side of a mountain, and the tow wagon came and had to pull the car up, it wouldn't happen overnight. It might take hours to get that car back up. And when you got it back up, it's probably going to be damaged. It probably needs to go get repaired. So I can tell you 4 years is not enough. But what I feel confident about. I think that the country is moving in a far better direction than it was in January of 2009.
Finally, Mark Morial, your city has a difficult challenge on the first Sunday in February 2013. Now, you know, we had the Super Bowl up here. Everybody is still raving about it. The good Lord gave us April weather in the middle of February. Can New Orleans rise to the challenge? Because this really is the big coming out party for New Orleans after Katrina to be able to have the privilege of hosting a Super Bowl. But y'all got to come behind us.
Let me tell you something. Nobody does Super Bowls better than New Orleans. This will be number 10.
So this will be the best 10.
So Indy did a great job, but you got a long way to catch up with 10.
See, that's a proud. No, one final thing, and it looks like the people of New Orleans were so devoted to their printed newspaper, the Times-Picayune, that they've adopted this new newspaper from Baton Rouge, the Advocate, who's printing a newspaper in New Orleans to meet that need.
The Advocate's a great newspaper. I read it and followed it the many, many years I was in the legislature. And I think many people are pleased that they've entered the market, because that will create some competition. Mm-hmm. And it'll create some editorial competition and some competition for the eyeballs of the readers. So I hear a lot of excitement that the Advocate is there. The Times-Picayune is an online paper now, publishing fewer days a week. There's some disappointment, but I'm also willing to say let's give them a chance to see what emerges from their restructuring.
Mark Morial, president of the National Urban League, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
I wish you the best. Thank you.